We'll move now to Nico Verhagen, who I'm absolutely delighted took up our invitation to come and present to us. Nico, as you can see in the biography, started at the beginning of La Via Campesina, and currently is based in Europe and is the a member of the International Secretariat of La Via Campesina. Not one of the political leaders, but in the Secretariat. He has been to one of our meetings, a couple of our meetings before, and has always been extremely helpful in explaining the views which come from the small-scale farmers' movement, the Via Campesina, which he'll tell you a little bit more. I had the privilege last year of looking very closely at La Via Campesina, and it is truly remarkable. An organisation, a global movement that has built up over the last 15 or more years to something that is very significant internationally. And Nico, I'd be delighted if you could share some of your thoughts with, you, with us.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. I'll go over there. In preparing this discussion, I talked also with Patrick and others, and we thought it would be interesting to talk briefly about three points with you today. The first one would be what is actually La Via Campesina? What is this peasant movement? Why did it came into existence? And how does it function? Because many people, they have a lot of questions about this. The second point will be to explain to you where the concept or the idea of food sovereignty came from, what role it has played in our political struggle up till now. And the last part, I would like to say something about the model of agriculture and the role of peasant-based smallholder production in the current context. So, what does Via Campesina, where it come from? I think, if you remember, in the beginning of the 90s, there were the World Trade negotiations. That was a moment where peasant organizations, they became aware that the key decisions about agriculture policy were any longer taken at national level or regional level, but they were taken at the international level, because that was a stage where the conditions were set for national policies. So in 1992, a number of organizations met in Nicaragua, and they decided to set up an international space which is called La Via Campesina. And then in 1993, 60 organizations came together, and they founded this movement. And already at birth was a sign of the kind of context we were in, because it was really a struggle to get Via Campesina alive, because there were people that were accompanying the process that had other ideas in mind with this this space. They wanted Via Campesina to be in a very open, non-political space where all the peasant organizations, big and small, could meet to talk about anything they want. And especially wanted to make a space that would generate a lot of resources for the agriculture sector. And usually the resources don't go to small holders, they go to the bigger producer. That was exactly the risk at that moment as well. And the small holder organizations said, no, we don't want this kind of space. We need a strong voice of peasants internationally. We need another kind of organization. And we don't want to go for defense of our or issues to IFAP, which was at that time the big producer organization. So that through this conflict, the peasant organization, they took over the lead of the process and they established Via Campesina. And this is very significant, because this struggle kept on going in the years also later, because also at the international space there were no smallholders talking on behalf of themselves about the organization. The voices were NGOs, there were all kinds of other people that were talking about us, but there was not a proper voice of small farmers themselves. And this space had to be fought for. It was not given to us. We had to gain this space and sometimes to take it. And that did not always make everybody happy. But I think the people that are here in this room, they are more or less happy with the involvement of Via Campesina, I hope. So what is Via Campesina? We say Via Campesina is like a vehicle. It's like it is a way of giving a voice to peasant organizations. It makes them strong at the international level, because we have a very clear joint analysis of the agriculture sector. What are the problems? It's the key conflict between smallholder production and the more corporate industrial way of production that we see as the key conflict. And so we are able to, and we have developed a very clear long-term vision, which is mostly kept by food sovereignty. And these two points are very strong uniting elements in our movement. And it makes us capable of being very clear on a number of issues at the international level. At the same time, the fact that organizations are part of your council makes them also stronger at the national level and at the regional level. Because, for example, I noticed in Europe that when Via Campesina became stronger, also people started to listen more to European coordination via Campesina, for example. And we saw similar effects in other countries, where the fact that you're part of an international movement gives you more leverage towards your national governments, towards your allies, and you can protect yourself better against your enemies as well. So, what are the key issues? Just very quickly, of course, land, seed, we work on the market issues. Peasant rights is very important. We talk about the role of the TNCs. We want to roll back their influence. The climate crisis is very important. The gender, the women issue, because we have a campaign against to stop violence against women, and we see it as a very important, not only for the women, of course, but also as a very important strategy to strengthen our movement, because if we want to give the women a real space inside the movement, the least thing that we should do is try to stop violence inside and outside our movement in any form. We work a lot with the youth, and this is one over the last years it became very strong. Sometimes people say that we use too many, we just talk in slogans, we always have these big ideas and we just say we go for that. And at the international level, yeah, that's true, because this is the way how we unite a huge movement that is very diverse culturally, economically, socially. So we need some clear lines we want to mobilize on. And this is what you usually read in our statements. But of course, at the other levels, we have also very differentiated answers to the policymakers at the international level, the regional level, and national level. And for example, if you go to a member of the Scottish Crofters Union, and you may ask, what is the accompanying, they may not know. But of course, they do know what is the Scottish Crofters Union. In the Scottish Crofters Union in Scotland, that's Via Campesina in Scotland. It's not that Via Campesina from the international goes to Scotland to negotiate with the government to obtain some kind of improvement. It doesn't function like that. That's what people often don't understand. That Via Campesina plays a certain role for the organization at the international level, but at the national level, the regional level, it's our member organization that play the key role, and we support them in this process. Then perhaps about food sovereignty. Where does it come from? When the company started came into existence, the context was very different. Agriculture was nearly a non-issue. The World Bank was telling to people in Senegal, well, you better not produce, it doesn't make sense. It's cheap on the world market, there's produce enough. Just go and do other things. So the whole idea was just liberalize the markets, don't bother about production, it will organize itself. And the key slogan was food security. You should just give people access to food from the world market especially, and then problems would resolve themselves by itself. And of course we knew it was false. It was not true. So we, inside the movement, we needed to find a vehicle, a concept that would make this very clear. And even if people would not directly understand what it means, and even would they think that the term itself is not appropriate, the key idea of our movement was to find a term that would really reflect the kind of model of agriculture that we defend, the kind of discussion we want, the kind of direction, the vision we want to go. And I think, personally, I think that food sovereignty played that role wonderfully, because it's very clear that it's about people. People are in the center of the process. It's about production, about local production, it's about local markets, about local food systems. It's about autonomy by people and not by corporates. All that is very well embodied in the concept. It also clears very well what you resist against the corpus, against patents, GMOs, etc., etc. So, in that respect, even if it's in certain contexts a bit of a difficult term, it played very well the vehicle role of bringing it to the mainstream, debate where it should be. And that is something which we achieved over the last 10, 15 years, that the whole debate has been shifting. Because, for example, issues like land reform, they were not on the agenda in the 80s, 90s. And they are now, agriculture is very high on the agenda. Everybody talks about smallholder agriculture. And this is one of the results is the ongoing work of the Via Campesina and other moves to bring this issue back in the international arena. And now the crisis comes up, it emerges like this. But it's also the result of the ongoing work of all our movements on these issues. So I think, to give you another small example to illustrate this, for example, we also said in the 90s, a WTO out of agriculture, which was said by people that it was a totally unrealistic slogan, it did not make sense. We should more look inside WTO how we could improve the agricultural agreement. But we were sure that politically we would not be able to win a battle if we would start to negotiate inside the agreement of agriculture. So we wanted to make it very clear that we need a different discussion, different approach to the trade issue. So the WTO of agriculture made very clear what kind of debate, what kind of direction we want to go. So even if people did not agree, we could discuss with them about our issues and not about what they want to discuss in all these technical dossiers in WTO. Because that was what happened often. Right? If you went to the WTO arena, there were lots of technical dossiers and you were sucked into the negotiation process and it became more and more complex, and in the end nobody knew anywhere where to go. And of course we didn't want, because then you depoliticize the political struggle, but in essence it's a political struggle because we want to shift the balance of power. And the WTO of agriculture law was very useful in shifting the debate and also helping to shift the balance of power and mobilize forces behind a different agenda. So I will try to not speak too long. It's okay, Patrick? One thing about the model of agriculture. It's very interesting that the overall perception, it's getting a bit less now, but the overall perception was that smallholder peasants, smallholder agriculture is something, well, nearly of the past. Okay, we have still some peasants in Europe, we have a few more peasants in the south, but it is not really a viable system, it's not very efficient. In the end, we will end up producing food in a much more effective and, of course, industrial way. But if you look to the facts, it's not at all true. The reality is totally different. And that's very, in that way, the debate is very ideological. If you just go to the facts and you look at the facts, you see a totally different picture. Because over half of the people worldwide are working in peasant-based smallholder agriculture. They are food providers like pastoralists, fisherfolk, urban, and there are also many urban people that produce food. So it's half of the population. How can you say that half the world population is something of the past? They are there, and they want to live, and they want to develop their ways of production, and they can decide how they want to develop it. So even if you think they are not very efficient, even if you think they are something of the past, they are still there, and you have to do with them, and they want to live, and they want to develop their production. And in the end, we will see where development goes. And we will see where we'll be in 10 or 20 or 30 years. But for the time being, they are there, the policymakers, they have to take them into account. And I think also they produce food for 70% of the consumers worldwide. So even if you look then back to what is the role of the industrial system, producing agri-fuels, producing feedstuffs, and producing only food for 30% of the world population, they are the short-term, more marginal phenomena in this world. They are there only 50, 60, 70 years. And it's a young sector, and they may also disappear again at a certain moment. And so I think we should try to shift also our perspective on who is really producing food and who has the right to say something about food production. And for example, like I was said before, food production is about knowledge. It's about people that know how to produce food. And this should be something within the center of the policymakers, for example. So public policies that allow, for example, researchers really support peasant-based production. It can be peasant-led research, for example. It's very important. It's also very important to give people access to education, to give also to spread the good experiences, for example, and allow peasants also to strengthen their way of production, to share experiences. So this is really important for public policies. And we can never expect the private sector to do that, because the private sector, their interest is to sell inputs. Capital, fertilizer, pesticides, seeds, whatever. And as long as they can sell, they are happy. But if they cannot sell anymore, then they will be very unhappy. And I can assure you that all these people that are talking about smallholder production, about agroecology production, as soon as we get to limit their markets, they will not be so friendly anymore. And this is really this is one of the big battles that is going on in Africa now around Accra, where the fertilizer industry just says, we want growth, we want the governments to build roads and build houses that we can ship in the fertilizer we want to get rid of in Africa, with the UN support probably. So this is really, it is really a fierce battle. It's not something like you can just handle with good ideas and some goodwill here and there. No, it's a strong battle. And in many countries, our organization are in the front line of that battle, and it's a tough battle. And we need to build strong alliances, and we need to try to shift this the balance of power also in this area. And I think one of the key one of the key, I would say, challenges to make the broader public understand it's not the TNCs who are the dominant and most important food producers like the supermarkets, the big companies. No, it's the small producers worldwide that are really at the center, and that they are the most efficient food producers. And that's a real challenge to make people understand that, despite of all the ideological disinformation. And there are many more facts, good reports from FAO, from Olivier de Sutter about agroecology, and just to with a simple fact that if you, for example, with sustainable agroecological method, it's not difficult to increase production with 100%, for example. It is if you apply it in a systemic way, you can increase food production easily with 50 to 100%. So if you look then back to what is actually the real food crisis issue. And then, for example, in China, I just read an article that Chinese scientists say that they can resolve their own food issue. They don't need, in the end, they don't need imports from the world market to resolve the issue. So if they develop their own capacity, they can resolve their food problem, and we cannot use it anymore in the global debate to say, well, we need to increase productivity at any expense just to ship food to the Chinese market. So there are many examples like this. I could go on, but I should not make it too long, I think. Just that perhaps also linked to what Mamadou will say, that in Via Campesina, that over the last years, the more concrete development of sustainable agroecological production method, it has gained a lot of interest also inside the organizations. And of course, many of them, they were already working along this line, because the original way of agriculture was organic and it was sustainable. It has developed itself in the wrong direction. So many organizations, they recognize this concept, and they, of course, they are practicing, they want to exchange about it and to develop it more. And this is taking a lot of interest, and we are now building schools in different regions, setting up courses, and it's really spreading out very quickly. Because farmers, they understand that this is a way to strengthen their own model of production. And I think this is really what this food sovereignty also about, that you strengthen what you have and what you want as a producer and as a consumer, to protect our own local food systems. And I think it has to be done in Africa, in Asia, and America, but also in Europe. Okay, thank you, that's it.
Nico, thank you so much for that, and trying to compress a very long history, a very erudite history, into a few minutes. But he'll be here for a little bit longer. Unfortunately, has to leave rather soon to go back to Hamburg. But do try and catch him in the coffee break. And you just have to know that the reform of the Committee on World Food Security that is taking place, and now the new Committee on World Food Security is meeting 37. Meeting in Rome next month. That reform took place because of Via Campesina. I mean, others were involved, and many of us in this room were involved in that process. But it was that clarity of vision of the need for something different, and the way to be able to negotiate with many governments in different parts of the world to make sure that that change, that process of change started, was very much due to La Via. So I salute them for that. Nico Verhagen, as I said, has to leave to get back to Germany just after the coffee break. There is just a nanosecond of time for some burning questions, and I would just reserve them ready to be directed to Nico. And while you're thinking about your question, I've got one. Nico, you mentioned a lot about the peasant model of production. I understand that the Via Campesina is doing quite a lot at the moment on agroecology and more ecological methods of food provision. Could you just describe succinctly what that is?
Well, it has already going on for a certain number of years. As you may know, in Central America, there was a program called Campesino. It was developed already in the 80s, so it dates back already from a long time that peasant organizations are setting up ways of exchanging experiences and applying, let's say, adapted technologies or methods of production and share them with other peasants in their country and also in regions. And what we try to do now in a more systematic way is that we set up over the last years in each region exchanges where we bring together from the national organization some key people that work on these issues. They exchange experiences in a regional seminar for about 1 week, and they go and visit experience in the country where they are, and then they go back to their organizations to feed that in the growth of their organizations. We also are setting up schools. Maudu mentioned in the Near East Center, we want the idea is to build that out more towards a center for courses on sustainable agriculture. We have the YALAS, it's called the Institutes in Latin America. There are now 3 or 4 where people can really do a study of 3 to 4 years, like on an agricultural university. So there are many things going on at this level.
Thank you. Do you have another burning question? Yeah?
Hi, I'm Stuart Coop from Practical Action. My question to Nico is about situations where corporations are actually present in a region or in a district, and where the peasant movement is there. In fact, what happens is a much more pragmatic and a negotiation, if you like, and it's not as if the process is a transition, it's a gradual transition, there'll be movements forward and there'll be movements backwards. So, although we say, you know, we are against corporations, in the practice, what the peasant movements have to do is to negotiate and to try and find solutions with those players. So that's really what I wanted to ask you about.
I feel always a bit frustrated with this kind of intervention because it's 10 minutes and you go very to try to give you a general picture, so the picture is always too general. So of course, in practice, people live in a concrete context and they try to find a way, but at least if we have a clear strategy, clear vision where we want to go, then it's easier to resist certain developments and to build other niches. Like Mabalu said, the best thing we can do is to strengthen our own model of production, our own market, etc. That is also an answer to reduce or limit the influence of transnational corporations, for example. It's not only, but sometimes you also need land occupations, you need also other ways of negotiating or doing actions of mobilization to try to roll back their influence. But in the end, it's about control, and I think in the end we want to reduce their control over the food system. But there are many ways how we try to go for that. It's a very broad strategy, I think.
Thanks, Jeff Tansley. How are you engaging with the reform of CAP and this so-called knowledge-based bioeconomy in Innovation Europe? Because that's where the big money's going, $80 billion in the aid, and actually we are the real innovators. And if Europe wanted to be innovators, it would actually innovate in this way. And I think that's a real challenge.
It's for me difficult to answer your question because I don't know the program you talk. So I. So sorry, it's difficult to react to that.
But I think the point made is well made. I think the innovation in this area is coming from the farmers themselves, it's coming from the small scale sector, as often you describe. Do we have one last question? Anybody? Or are you desperate to make a break and have a coffee? Which I think is the case, so thank you, Nico, very much indeed, and bon voyage back to Hamburg. But do save a little bit so people can talk to you. We started a little bit late. Can we be very disciplined and come back in 20 minutes? We'll have a brief discussion on the end of Europe, but then, importantly, the panel with all the speakers. Thank you very much, Nico.